Fast food joints were all over. This was the main transportation hub on the island for buses and maxi taxis. It was 7 o'clock the next morning in the land of steel pan, calypso, soca, chutney, and limbo, on a mountainous island renamed by Christopher Columbus. I had come to town before sunrise to check out the area near the former Trinidad government railway headquarters. By the time the sun had pulled itself from the sea, I had plotted 3 exits in case shit went wrong, and I was forced to flee through an area that had thousands of visitors each day. That, plus thousands of locals. I walked each route 3 times, each time at a normal pace. Then I left the keys in the van's ignition, driver's side door unlocked, and a Minnie Mouse sunshade in the front window. A loaded gun was under the front seat, easy to reach if I came back running. I dressed like a University of the West Indies student, wore a t-shirt from St. Augustine campus, jean shorts, sexy sandals, my hair short and light brown. I went for young, but mature and intellectual. Anxious, I sat listening to the rapidly changing conversations of a group of women on the way to the Port of Spain General Hospital. One wore a tee that read, "Kamala have no jack to change she tire." I listened to conversations, captured the rhythm of the tongue, picked up variations in the accent, pretty much mastered the sing-song aspect, created a passable Trini accent, Chiguanas or Port of Spain minus the proper idioms. Many had an interesting blend, a unique exoticness not seen in North America. Despite the beauty of the people and the long lines for lattes, unrest was all around me. The newspaper spoke in volumes. Another social explosion was about to happen. Economy in decline, frustration, poverty, political fallouts. IMF and World Bank called everything but the devil. Not enough to pay for housing, not enough money to live. Barbados stealing their flying fish. School book prices high, salaries low, teachers protesting, nurses protesting. Police had their crimes, army had their crimes, people losing their pensions. And the band played on. King Killer showed up by 8. I left my table, stood next to him as I ordered a second latte. I sat table away from him, sat facing him, leg bouncing, cleavage popping, local paper open, pretending to read about killings, crimes, and the drugs coming in from South America. The Gunta didn't notice me. He wore tie clips, pocket squares, French cuffs. Charcoal gray suit, perfectly tailored, his shoes in brown hues. I watched the handsome 18-karat gold wedding ring-wearing thug and sorry-eyed professional women. Inside of 30 minutes, he'd befriended 5 women as they came in to get coffees or iced drinks. Befriended them, took their cards, and exchanged fuck-you-later smiles with each as they left to rush to work. All had been well-dressed women. None had looked over 25. I nodded. I understood. He was about status. He was attracted to women with smooth skin and young eggs. The next morning, I dressed like an executive. Fitted sleeveless dress, low heels, silver watch, bracelets, earrings. Sat properly, was there when he arrived. A copy of the local paper on my bistro table as I sipped iced green tea and read. Pretending to be interested in an article where the president of the St. Lucia Craft and Dry Goods Vendors Association was calling for heavy security ahead of the cruise season in a bid to prevent tourist muggings in the city. Next page said that a major think tank based in Washington, D.C. said that Caribbean 360 had reported that gangs were stronger than the government here in Trinidad and Tobago. Now maybe the LKs were on the road to attempting a coup like the one that happened in Trinidad and Tobago in 1990 by a small maverick Islamic group called Jamaat al-Muslimin, led by Yassin Abu Bakr. The moment had arrived. I inhaled, put the paper down, felt his hardcore energy. King Killer noticed me. We made eye contact. He grinned and nodded. I nodded in return. No grin. Hard to get. After he ordered, he stood over me, got my attention again, and said, "Good morning." I looked up, saw him, and said, "G'day. How's your morning so far?" "My morning feels out of sorts, to be honest. I'm over here feeling like it's midnight and past my bedtime. Maybe because back home it is midnight. And don't you look alert and as happy as Larry." "You have an interesting accent." "So do you. Wee cracker of a day, isn't it? Thought you might have been an English rose at best, red legs at worst. Red legs was a derogatory name for the poor whites in the islands. I said, New Zealand. A Kiwi. I'm intrigued. Here on business, or have you moved to my island? Here on business. For how long?
We'll only be here a couple of days.
Pardon the yawn. Need more coffee. Jet lag? The 16-hour time difference is killing me. It's morning here, but it's late night at home. By the time I'm in a meeting at 3 this afternoon, it'll be a wee bit after sunrise back home. So that'll mean I'll have stayed up all night again, and I'm usually in bed by 9, 10 at the latest.